The Catholic Channel, Sirius 159, and XM 117 presents Just Love, a conversation on the Church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome to Just Love, and if you are listening to us, you know we're not on Sirius 159. We're on Sirius XM 129. But you never know what they're going to lead into the studio with, and so it makes life interesting. You just got to roll with the punches. But it is Just Love. I am Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world, and we kind of say just do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, and just love yourself. And if we do all that, then our world will be more just. It will be more compassionate. And, you know, even though the Pope has gone home, hopefully there's some continuation of that happening, and there's still attention to some of the things he spoke about. And one of the things that kind of coincided with his being here was the United Nations passing the Sustainable Development Goals, which is the same as the Millennium Goals, except they updated them, and, you know, somebody's got to get paid to come up with a new title for these things, but they're all kind of the same thing, basically trying to make our world a better place, trying to make sure that people who don't have enough get enough, and looking at the various ways that as a world we can come to do that. So we're going to talk with people who are trying to do that and trying to make that a reality in the world. And actually, just earlier this week, I was actually at a conference which was called the Poverty Awareness Campaign, which was sponsored by a group called Techo, which in Spanish means house, Univision, and it was basically about trying to raise awareness. And I like their hashtag. The hashtag was hashtag zero slums. So basically their goal is to kind of eliminate all the slums in the world. And it was kind of an interesting concept, you know, an interesting trying to raise awareness in the United States of some of the inequitable conditions, particularly in Latin America. And, you know, one of the things I heard, I didn't check it out on my own, so I'm passing on to you what I heard, is that Latin America is the place where it's the greatest inequity among populations that are there in terms of economics. Now, that, I have to say, came as a little bit of a surprise to me. If you kind of asked me to do a multiple choice, I probably would have picked maybe Africa where that might be. But I guess if you look at the difference between different tiers, maybe there's greater inequity in Latin America, maybe not the total number proportion of poor people. I don't know what the answer to that is. But anyway, so that's what we've been kind of concentrating on after the Pope left. And we're going to speak in a little bit with Eric LeCompote, who is the executive director of Jubilee USA Network. And then a little bit later on in the show, we're going to speak with Anthony Annette, who is the advisor at the IRST Institute at Columbia University. So we're going to have a conversation about those sustainable development goals, trying to make our world a better place. So, Tom, what's new in the world?
There's a good number of things new in the world, Monsignor. One of the things, actually, that just occurred earlier this week was Antonio Guterres, who is chief of the United Nations Human Resources, Human Rights Commission, and he's the High Counselor for Refugees, gave a speech in Geneva on this past Monday. And he gave estimates of what the number of refugees on the world now, and it's now estimated that the number of refugees is at 60 million migrants, which 90% come from the developing world. He made mention that there was an interlinked mega crisis in Iraq and Syria that's uprooted some 15 million.
60 million what?
60 million people, 60 million refugees in the world, I would say. And they basically said how the number has gone up from 46 million. They blamed the interlocking mega crisis in Iraq and Syria.
What's the source of that?
The source of that is the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. He just gave the report on Monday, Monsignor.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's true. Okay, I mean, we got to check that piece of information out because that number I think is significantly too high. So we'll check it out though. But be that as may, there are millions and millions of refugees throughout the world.
Yes, I would say, and you know, they based the increase, Monsignor, on the interlinked mega crisis in Iraq and Syria. They're estimating that has uprooted some 15 million people, both internally and externally.
Right.
And over the past 12 months, they've also said that 500,000 have also fled their homes in South Sudan, 190,000 in Burundi, 1.1 million in Yemen, and 300,000 in Libya, as well as the tens of thousands who are fleeing gang violence in Central America. So we have a tremendous number of people on the move. And obviously, this is causing great disruption, both in Europe and in other countries as well. It is one of the things that I think that we, you know, obviously we examine this on Just Love, and, you know, we have to wind up looking at these kind of situations to see that we treat our brothers and sisters with the respect and dignity that they deserve.
Let's go to our first guest. Our first guest is Eric LeCompote, who is the executive director of Jubilee USA Network. And he is a graduated from St. John's University. Eric, thank you so much for being with us. We lost Eric on the line, so we'll try to get Eric back, and then we'll kind of talk with him about some of the goals that the Jubilee USA Network has. I mean, it's interesting when you talk about the world economic development, there are many, many aspects of it. And what Tom was talking about, we were talking about that huge number of refugees sometimes. And I think why his number was a little bit too high was because they conflate two different concepts. They conflate what's technically called internally displaced people. As I've said before, that's if something happens in Austin, Texas, and somebody migrates to New York, that would be an internally displaced person. However, if the person went from Austin, Texas to Mexico or Guatemala, that would be a refugee. And so sometimes when they talk about that notion of all the people being displaced, they kind of conflate the two numbers, and it's hard to kind of keep them straight in some way. So we're there. So let's go to Eric now. Eric LeCompte is the executive director of Jubilee Network, and we're still trying to get him on the line. But Tom, what other news do we have?
This week, Monsignor, on October 7th, was the 14th anniversary of the United States invasion in Afghanistan. And as you may be aware, back on the weekend, there was a really tragic situation, Monsignor. There was a hospital that was run by Doctors Without Borders that was in a place called Kunduz, Afghanistan. And it was hit by an airstrike on this previous weekend, on Saturday. And it killed 22 people. It killed 10 of the Doctors Without Borders staff. And it killed 12 people, including three children who were within the hospital. Doctors Without Borders has decided that they're no longer going to be in Kunduz. It's a little bit too dangerous. And during a hearing that was held,
as part of that, were any of the doctors themselves killed?
It didn't go into detail. It said staff, Monsignor. So I'm not sure if any of the doctors themselves were killed. But I know Doctors Without Borders has said afterward that, you know, they want a full accounting of what wound up happening, obviously, and they're pulling their staff out. General John Campbell has admitted the airstrike was a mistake, he claimed it was a United States decision made with the U.S. chain of command. It was a mistake. President Obama, of course, has asked for a full accounting of what wound up happening. And just to give a little context, there's currently, 14 years after we invaded, there's 10,000 American troops are in Afghanistan. They're mostly to train Afghani forces, and the United Nations has estimated that since 2009, almost 20,000 civilians have perished in that country. So 14 years afterward, Monsignor, I know we did a little bit of a drawdown. We drew some of our troops back, but that place is still laden with violence, and it's really such a tragedy.
Yeah, it is. It's a very, very difficult situation, and it's so, so hard to do that. And again, I think the story which you kind of talked to our listeners about the hospital and about the hospital being bombed, it is a clear kind of indication to me as to why there is such a problem with war in any place, and why, according to our Catholic theology, our social teaching, war is supposed to be the last resort, because things happen in war. When you're using big weapons, when you're fighting in tight places, things happen. So, I mean, you know, the mistake of kind of bombing the hospital, killing people, places that clearly should not be bombed, those things are part of the messiness. They're part of the fact that wars just get out of control, that you can't control everything, despite all of our technology. And I think, you know, Tom, I think one of the difficulties that we have in the current situation is because we see a lot of movies, we see a lot of precision stuff, and we kind of think that war has become antiseptic. And like, you know, we talk about pinpointing targets, and we do. And for the most part, much of kind of the civilian damage doesn't happen anymore. And that's great. But it doesn't mean that none of it doesn't happen. It doesn't mean that things don't get out of control. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why in our Catholic social teaching that war is basically the last resort. And the conditions under which we kind of say it's okay, it's just go to war, are so very, very limited. You have to try everything else to resolve it. You also have to try to make sure that the damage you're going to do is proportionate to the victory you're going to gain. You got to make sure that the right people declare it, that it's not just some rogue group. And those are some of the main characteristics that you do it, and that you fight it in a way that doesn't harm unnecessarily and the collateral damage to civilians. So that's a very, very difficult piece of the condition, why it's so hard to meet that criteria of a just war. So anyway, Tom, any other?
Well, you know, Monsignor, one of the things, you know, we have to also remember, you know, we celebrate good things too. And actually this past weekend was the...
Sorry to interject. Are you able to hear me?
Yes. Oh, is Eric? Is that you?
Yes, I've been on the line for over 20 minutes and going in and out. It sounds like there's technical difficulty. I know I was called late, but I've just been here for about 20 minutes going in and out.
Guess what? We've been 20 minutes late, so join the crew. And sometimes
you're on,
and sometimes
I'm glad you can hear me. It sounds like they've been patching me in and out over the past.
Sometimes you wind up in traffic jams, and sometimes these things happen, and that's why you got to roll with the punches. But Eric,
we're delighted
that you are with us. We can hear you loud and clear, and I really appreciate your taking the time to be with us today on Just Love. Thanks so much.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Monsignor Sullivan. It's a real honor, and I have many friends who know you well, and they all ask.
Now I'm in trouble. So Eric, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're up to these days. With how'd you get to Jubilee USA?
Well, you know, like many of us, I've been on a very particular journey, and certainly my vocation is to address inequality and try to end extreme poverty. I grew up in the south side of Chicago in a Catholic working class family.
Got to ask you, Cubs or White Sox fan?
Oh, White Sox, Southsider.
Okay.
And you know, we took our faith and continue to take our faith and the calling very seriously. I remember from a very young age going to church with my parents. I was 4 or 5 years old, and they brought me to the front of the church, and I saw something that just startled me, that struck me, that I really couldn't understand. You know, above the altar, there was this visage, this face of total suffering, total death, total failure, and it shocked me. You know, every week we come here to this place and we sing happy songs, we build community, yet this is what is in front of us. And my parents came up from behind me, my father on one side, my mother on the other, and they knew I was looking at that, and my mom said, "That's Jesus Christ, the Son of God." And my dad continued, and he said, "And you know what, Eric, we're all the children of God." And I remember him saying that and looking back up at that cross and thinking, if this was what happens to the children of God, I want no part of it.
Well.
But for me, that set something off, and certainly, you know, have been active in the Catholic worker movement, also various Catholic human rights ministries over the years. And for the last 6 years, I've been here at Jubilee USA Network, which is a group founded by religious leaders, in particular Pope John Paul II, to challenge unjust global financial policies that create the structures of poverty around the world. So today at Jubilee USA, you know, after Pope John Paul II called us into being, we've won $130 billion in debt relief for the world's poorest countries, and we continue to work on debt, tax, and trade policies to shift them in order to end the structures that create global poverty.
Hey, you know, this may be an unfair question, but it just struck me. Do you know what the total third world debt is?
It's actually well over $1 trillion. It's a gargantuan amount, and it also depends on how you define the developing world, because there are certainly various sectors. But the reality of it is that most of the world are either middle income or low income countries. So just in the poorest countries, the debt is well over $1 trillion.
Okay.
And that doesn't take into account the many countries we're working with in the Caribbean and in other places where, you know, their debts aren't as high. But in terms of the debts connected to their poverty ratios, it's quite excruciatingly high.
So give our listeners just a little bit of a primer. And you know, I bet you that there's a good portion of our listeners who may have mortgages on their houses. They may have they may have some debt on their credit cards. And, you know, debt is what makes the world go round. And without debt, you can't do certain things. But what are the characteristics of when we talk about third world debt and we talk about it being a very negative, harsh thing? What makes that a little bit different than the mortgage I might own on my house or, you know, the $1,000 bill I may have on my credit card?
Well, there's quite a few differences, although I know all of us can resonate with debt. And all of us, you know, as we look at our paychecks and look at how we have to pay our mortgage and our credit bills, debt can be a problem for all of us. But some of the things that make debt around the world, in particular the developing world, more unique, has to do with the lack of regulation around it. So, for example, when my wife and I bought our house here in Washington, D.C., the bank had to make sure we had the money in the bank in order to put a down payment on. You know, we had to sign a contract for it. We had to prove to the bank that the money was actually going for a mortgage and not for something else. But what's remarkable, in the international financial system, these regulations don't often exist. So a lender who lends money to a developing country doesn't necessarily know if that money is going to what the borrower says it's going to. Is it going to build a bridge or is it going to build a palace? I think another aspect of that is that, unfortunately, with these big financial institutions like the International Monetary Fund, but also these particular hedge funds, often they don't check if the person signing for the loan actually has the authority to do it. And that still happens today. And even more remarkably, it's very common for hidden attachments, hidden memos to be put in with lenders that would have exorbitant, unsustainable fees. Really, the only way to really liken global debt and global debt policies to our own debt in the U.S. is some of the shady dealings that took place with the mortgage crisis in the United States, or things like payday lending, which we know are very exploitative to poor communities. And these are the same things that operate around the world. So debt is certainly a very significant problem. It's why Pope John Paul II said we need to forgive it for the developing world. It's why we still work for it today. But it's also why we work to solve the problem by implementing principles of responsible lending and borrowing, public budget transparency around the world, moving forward the Pope Francis-endorsed proposal of a global bankruptcy process, looking to curb tax havens and corporate tax evasion around the world, because the developing world loses $1 trillion to that every year. So we understand that when we shift these policies even a little bit, it moves millions of people out of extreme poverty.
So Eric, we're speaking with Eric LeCompote, who is the executive director of Jubilee USA Network, and we're speaking about poverty, third world debt. Eric, so again, let's do a little bit of education of me first and then our listeners. So, I mean, when we talk about third world debt, are we talking about mainly or exclusively money that a third world government country might owe to somebody, or are we talking about what different groups within that country may have borrowed and owe?
Well, certainly all of those different types have implications on an economy. So we do review all those issues, but primarily what we focus on is what a government takes out in the name of its people.
Okay.
And how those particular debt policies affect a poor population. I think another aspect of it that we've seen in wealthy countries like Greece, where austerity policies and their debt restructuring pushed more than a third of the entire population into poverty, is that when countries have debt, often the solutions that are pushed forward by big banks, by the International Monetary Fund, they often are solutions that promote austerity. Which again is something, you know, that we've had a tradition of speaking out very strongly against in the church, and Pope Francis has made that one of the central issues that he talks about in the economy as well. So that focus is how the governments take out lending, but then also, you know, how they deal with it when they're not able to pay it back, which unfortunately, because of the great poverty and the lack of employment, development, and tax revenue in these countries, there are 50 countries around the world that are facing significant and worrying levels of debt distress.
So, Eric, are there kind of a few strategies or proposals that the Jubilee USA Network has that could make this situation better?
Yes, well, there's actually several, and you know, I'm happy to say they've all been endorsed by the Holy Father, and Pope Francis talks about some of these issues almost daily in his homilies, as well as his weekly Angelus address. But we believe, you know, not only do we need to continue to work for debt relief, but you know, what we're doing with the Catholic Church in the Caribbean is a good example of how to address those policies. And so some of the things we need to do is we need to be able to put forward principles, policies of responsible lending and borrowing, or public budget transparency, that, you know, budgets should be approved by their people. People should have the ability to audit how the government is spending that money and approving where that money comes from. That's a very crucial piece, and we've made a lot of progress on that in recent years, beyond just the money we're continuing to win in debt relief. A second piece that's actually critical is curbing corruption and tax evasion. It's called illicit financial flows, but right now the developing world loses more than $1 trillion a year because of corruption and tax evasion. So, in other words, for every $10 in aid the developed world gives the developing world, they're losing over $100 in tax evasion and corruption. And similarly, with the debt policies, they're losing $50 for every $10. So that's $150 that could be building schools and hospitals. And I think the third piece, you know, which the Holy Father has spoken about very specifically over the summer and alluded to in his very technical speech to the United Nations recently, is the implementation of a global bankruptcy process. Just like we have Chapter 9 or Chapter 11 in the United States and in most countries around the world, it's absolutely critical that we have these same kinds of processes for the global financial system. Unfortunately, a lot of the protections that we enjoy in the United States, which at times have not even been enough, don't exist in the financial system. It operates more akin to the Wild West than an orderly, transparent, stable, and sustainable system.
Are there any things that you're working on right now that you know, are down the line enough that they seem like maybe they might actually be implemented?
Well, you know, we're really fortunate, and I think it's because we represent the Catholic Church and the other mainline churches, the Jewish community. But, you know, Congressional Quarterly cites our efforts as being of the last genuine bipartisan efforts in Washington, D.C. So we continue to have a lot of success on these bold and often prophetic policies. Earlier in the year, not only did we win $100 million in debt relief for the three Ebola-affected countries in Africa, but we actually created a new trust fund at the International Monetary Fund so that when the poorest 30 countries in the world face a shock, a crisis, an earthquake, now they're going to be able to qualify for immediate debt relief. So that's very exciting, and we've been able to move forward that. I think some of the most exciting precedents we're winning right now is our work in the Caribbean. That started in Grenada. It's also taking place in Puerto Rico. And we'll be bringing together Catholic bishops and religious leaders of other denominations all together in the island of Grenada at the end of the month to be able to spread Jubilee on all the islands. And what we did is in Grenada, which is a very small place, working with the Catholic Archdiocese and the other religious leaders, we were able to interject ourselves in the negotiations between the government, between the companies, the banks, and the International Monetary Fund in order to prevent austerity from taking place, to curb corporate tax avoidance, and get a debt deal that had about a 50% cut, 50% debt relief. The deal certainly wasn't perfect, but it was one of the best deals so far. And because of how these complicated global financial policies of debt restructuring take place, any precedent that we win in a small place, like we won in Grenada, can now be applied to Zambia or Zimbabwe or El Salvador, countries that are not hundreds of millions in debt like Grenada, but actually billions of dollars in debt. And as we continue, you know, what we're doing in the Caribbean, you know, we've also been working very closely with Archbishop Roberto Gonzalez Nieves of Puerto Rico and all of the major religious leaders on the island, because they've also been facing a significant financial crisis, a serious debt crisis. And we've been able to help them move forward policies to hopefully prevent further austerity and get the debt relief the island needs. And our hope is, by the examples of what we've been able to do and support our religious partners in Grenada and Puerto Rico, is that we're going to be able to spread the Jubilee movement to Dominica and St. Lucia and other places in the Caribbean that are dealing with some of the most severe debt, financial, trade, and tax crises in the entire world.
Eric, I want to say thank you for taking the opportunity to be with us. Sorry you had to wait on the phone. We had a problem with the connection, but I want to thank you for the work that you've been doing and really the tremendous, you know, light you're shining on the issue of third world debt and how that really can impact a nation, impact the poorest of the poor people in not having a basic enough to live. So thank you, Eric, for being with us.
Thank you, Monsignor Sullivan. It was a real pleasure and honor to meet you by phone today.
Great.
Take care.
Eric LeCompote, Executive Director of Jubilee USA Network. Just love. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation about what's going on in the world, particularly from the perspective of our Catholic values and how we want to create a more just and a more compassionate world. Join us when we come back on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and more compassionate. We're speaking about some of the issues that deal with inequity in the world. And we speak about third world debt as one of those areas that can be terribly problematic. It's problematic because sometimes countries just get so burdened with it that them paying back the debt service, doesn't enable them to do some of the basics that they need in terms of investing in education and healthcare and other things just for the sake of the good of the people who are there. So the debt issue is a very, very critically important issue that needs to be, that does need to be dealt with. Tom, any new stuff?
But, you know, one of the things that's, I think, that impacts a little bit on the reason, you know, let's say the people migrate and also the reason that people are living in such poverty overseas, Monsignor, is because sometimes there's not jobs there, there's not trade. This past Tuesday, it was announced that negotiators for the United States and 11 other parties had come to an agreement on what's called the Trans-Pacific Partnership. This is a trade agreement that is going to be entered into by the United States and 11 other countries, Japan, Mexico, Canada, Australia, Brunei, Chile, Mexico, New Zealand, Vietnam. And together, these countries produce approximately 40% of the world's gross domestic product. So it's really a substantial number, part of the economy, Monsignor. And it's been said that it's akin to NAFTA, which we know was the North American Free Trade Agreement. It's meant to lower taxes on U.S. goods to make U.S. products more attractive to those who are going to be party to the agreement. It's meant to increase access to advanced United States products such as pharmaceuticals. And it also is going to lower the restriction on international dairy standards, Monsignor. So some of our dairy products might be available in those developing countries over there.
Now, why do we care as kind of the Catholic channel, Just Love? Why do we care about these issues? We care about them for a very, very simple but profound reason, is because we believe that the image of likeness of God and the dignity of the human person relates to people whether they live in the United States, whether they live in Japan, whether they live in Sudan, whether they live in Hawaii, whether they live in Australia, wherever they live, we believe in the basic dignity of the human person. And so when we deal with trade agreements, it really is a very complex area. And some of the arguments that we hear about it are arguments which, from our own Catholic perspective, need to be tempered by our more universal approach, so that rightly a government will analyze the thing as to what's in the best interest of their own people. Absolutely legitimate thing to do. How is it going to affect their people, their trade, jobs, etc. From our Catholic perspective, that is a value, but the value is, how does it affect the whole global economy? How does it affect people in other countries? Because that's as important to us as how it affects people in our own country. And that's sometimes when we have these policy conversations, our perspective is a little bit broader than some of the others. So in this Trans-Pacific treaty on trade, oftentimes one of the conversations and one of the big debates going on there is, you know, how's it going to affect American jobs? And is it going to hurt them? Is it going to take jobs to other countries? A very, very legitimate question, a very, very legitimate reality that needs to be taken into consideration. At the same time, from our Catholic perspective, we really want to see the development of jobs in other countries. We want to see those jobs enabling people in those countries to provide for themselves, enabling them to care for their families. And so we kind of like job development in other countries. Now, the caveat there, which oftentimes will be argued, and it is a debate, is, yeah, but the jobs are being produced there are unsafe. The standards are not good. The rate of pay there is not good. They can't. So they're not good jobs. And the phrase that is sometimes used is that in all of this stuff, you have a race to the bottom, that which country can produce the cheapest jobs, and that will attract more industries. I mean, as I mentioned on this show a while ago, I traveled to Bangladesh, and, you know, Bangladesh was taking some of the ready-made garment industry away from China. And the reason was the ability to produce goods there more economically made it more attractive for some of the brand names to buy stuff there. And then the hypothesis was, well, after that market kind of stabilizes, then somebody will figure out how in another place they can produce goods more cheaply and the jobs will go to that place. So on these trade issues, we care about them because they're about jobs. They're about international order. They're about how our economies work. And the perspective we bring is that we care about economies throughout the world, and we don't merely care about economies where in our own place. We care about them, and that's very important, but it's not the only perspective that we have. So any other news items, Tom?
One of the things that I think needs to be commemorated in Monsignor is, and it deals with the dignity of the human person, and an issue that is very important in the United States today is this past week, on October 3rd, was the 50th anniversary of the Immigration and Naturalization Act of 1965. Now, what this law did was it ended a era of what was race-based immigration and a quota system based on natural origin that overwhelmingly favored European immigrants. And it widened the gateway of immigration to people who come from other places. So not only did immigrants now come from Europe, but they also came from Asia, Latin America, Africa, and the Middle East. And a lot of people look at it, this is almost a third pillar of the democratic fulfillment in the United States that kind of is akin to the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act. And that this was such a major monumental legislative change for the United States. And it's fascinating how, you know, what was such a major change was accomplished those 50 years ago. And it seems today that we're still having conversations about immigration in this country and can't seem to come to any kind of consensus on it.
Well, Tom, you're right to push to put forth that as a very significant change in American immigration policy. Subsequent to that, we've had two other very significant kind of changes in our immigration policy. There was, in 1986, what at that point was some type of amnesty program that, you know, permitted people who were in the country for a period of time to apply and to get status in the country. And that millions of people took advantage of that. Interestingly, not probably as many as people thought would have taken advantage of it. And then a couple of years later, there was a change in the immigration policy again in, I think it was 1987. But since then, there hasn't been a lot of change significant change in the immigration policy. And that's why, again, from our perspective, we are strongly in favor of there being comprehensive immigration reform that deals with the various aspects of immigration reform in a way that is fair, that is humane, that is just. So that's part of what we're looking to do. You know what? I think, why don't we take a break? And
great.
When we take a break, we'll speak with our next guest, and we're going to continue our conversation about sustainable development and how we can actually make our world more just and more compassionate. Well, we say do it by just love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and we'll achieve a lot of making our world more just and more compassionate. Join us when we come back on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and will be more compassionate. Well, you know, Pope Francis went home, and we liked that he was here, and we're glad he's back in Rome now, taking care of business back there. But he did stop at the UN. He stopped at Congress, and some of the stuff he spoke about in his trip were things which closely relate to the Sustainable Development Goals, which is kind of the UN updating its Millennial Project to kind of set some new goals to end poverty. And so we're speaking today about some of those things. We just finished speaking with the director of the Jubilee USA Network, Evett Lecompote. And now we're going to speak with somebody who's been a guest on Just Love previously, Anthony Annette, who is Sustainable Development Advisor at the Earth Institute at Columbia University. Tony, thanks so much for coming in to speak with us again.
It's a pleasure, Monsignor. Thank you for inviting me back.
That's great. So what do you make of these new sustainable goals?
I think these goals are extremely important. They're actually, I would say they're transformational, because what you basically have, and a lot of people didn't notice last week with everything else going on, but you have 193 countries, the members of the United Nations, decided that they were going to adopt the principle of sustainable development going forward. And what that really means is they are saying it's no longer sufficient to look at GDP and economic growth and simple accumulation of resources when we talk about progress. That has to be always twinned with social inclusion and environmental sustainability. Therefore, it's a three-legged stool: the economic, the social, and the environmental. And you know, with a stool, if you take one of the legs out, the other stool collapses. So you need all three. So this is actually quite transformational. Of course, it has to be, as long as it's internalized and implemented.
That's a very, very good point. And I think I will tell you that I think a lot of people misread Pope Francis's encyclical, and because they thought it was a tree hugger encyclical. It was a people hugger encyclical. And basically says, you know, how you hug the trees is going to impact how you hug people.
No, that's right. And I actually attended a great gathering in the Vatican in July when Pope Francis brought the mayors of the world together to discuss issues of climate change, sustainable development, human trafficking at the level of cities. And everybody was excited when the Pope came in to talk to the group. It only was about 20 minutes over 2 days. But the first thing he said was, the very first thing, he says, this is not a green encyclical. This is a social encyclical. And that really rings home. It's right. It's about people. It's about how we live our lives on our planet. That's what it's about.
I think that's a very, 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 very important point. And I think one of the points that Pope Francis makes is that, as with most things, if you kind of mess up the environment, the people who usually wind up getting hurt the most are those on the margins, those who are poorer.
That's absolutely right. I think the brilliance of this Laudato Si encyclical is his idea of integral ecology, that, you know, when you hurt nature, you're hurting yourself. And the people who get hurt most, obviously, are the poor. Like a very simple statistic, it's something like we always talk about the awful carbon emissions that are destroying our planet. The bottom 3 billion people in the world account for only 6% of those carbon emissions. Therefore, it's the rich people in the world, and let's, that definition of rich is very broad, it includes probably most people in the US, are really hurting the world's very poorest people. And Pope Francis calls that the ecological debt that's owed to these people. It's a very, very important point.
Again, our listeners tune in, they tune out, they do whatever. Why is this carbon stuff so bad?
Well, why is the carbon stuff so bad? Well, quite simply because, well, I mean, the scientists tell you that when you pump this carbon dioxide into the atmosphere as a byproduct of burning fossil fuels, then that accumulation, it kind of, it warms up the planet and takes us beyond the zone of habitability. We've had this for the past 10,000 years. We've had something called the Holocene, which is this beautiful climate on the planet that allowed humanity to flourish, kind of from the, you could call it Garden of Eden conditions. Now, the planet is 4.5 billion years old, so this Holocene is a very small period, but it is the period that's conducive to human flourishing. And if we knock the planet outside this Holocene, which we are doing right now, then all bets are off. The conditions for human flourishing are no longer in place. The most obvious example of that is the scientists tell us that if we keep burning these fossil fuels at the current rate, the global temperature could rise by 4 to 6 degrees by the end of this century. Now, that doesn't sound like much, but if your body temperature rose by 6 degrees, you probably would not survive it. And it's the world's poorest people who will be first on the firing line. You will have crop yields down by 50% in places like Africa, severe droughts, severe floods, famine, massive migration of population, war, conflict. I mean, it's just a horrendous list when we think about it. So in a nutshell, that's why we worry about this little carbon thing.
Anthony Annette is the Sustainable Development Advisor of the Earth Institute at Columbia University. Tony, tell us, they passed 17 of these sustainable goals.
Yeah.
Which ones you like? Which are your top three?
Well, that's a very good point, because the whole point of the Sustainable Development Goals is they all go together. You can't really take one without the other. But just to give you a few highlights, I mean, goal one is end poverty in all its forms. Goal two is end hunger. Goal three is healthcare for all. Goal four is education for all.
See, I'm a PowerPoint guy. Yeah. I would just give you, I could combine one and two. You end poverty, you end hunger.
Well, you know, that's a very good point. Some people have argued that you could have actually combined them and reduced it to 10 goals.
Yeah, but I could have. I looked at them.
Yeah, you could have. But, you know, the number's not so important. It's the content of them. And I think it's basically saying that, well, it's actually a moral point. And I think Pope Francis made this point very clearly. And most moral systems would say, if you have the capacity to solve a problem, you have the responsibility to solve the problem. And we know that these problems are solvable. We can solve these problems of hunger and poverty and health and education. And it's a scandal that we have over 1 billion people living in extreme poverty today on less than a dollar a day. It's a scandal.
Now, I can buy the hunger bit. I mean, I'm not sure. So solve poverty for us.
Well, solve poverty. Well, that's a very big question. That's a very, very big question. And the first thing I say to you is there's no simple solution. If you look at where most poverty is in the world today, I would say it's concentrated in two places, sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia. And in sub-Saharan Africa, which is kind of the ground zero of poverty, you have a lot of things going wrong at the same time. The countries, look at the geography. The countries are landlocked. They often have, they're often water stressed. They have the great misfortune of being prone to all these horrible diseases that those of us who live in more temperate climates are not prone to. More natural disasters and natural hazards. Okay, they're also stuck in this kind of poverty trap. And that means they're too poor to make the investments needed to combat poverty. You know, if you make investments in health, in education, in infrastructure, in the fertilizers needed to make your agriculture more productive, that gets a virtuous cycle when you can escape from poverty. But sometimes you're just too poor and you're stuck. So this is why the Sustainable Development Goals continue what the Millennium Development Goals started and say, well, let's try and break this negative cycle of poverty. Let's focus on these, on interventions in health, in education, in nutrition, in agriculture, in energy, in infrastructure, and all these areas. And I think you mentioned 17 being a big number. Yes, it is, but it's multifaceted because poverty is multifaceted. You have to target it a number of different levels.
You know, Tony, I was speaking with Anthony Annette, who is the Sustainable Development Consultant at the Earth Institute of Columbia University. Tony, I can relate to what you're saying, because in the little world that I work in at Catholic Charities, we looked at kind of New York City, and I think the rate, how you did the baseline, was somewhere around 21% of people were living in poverty.
Yeah.
And what we did is we said, well, if you put together some various policies, in other words, if you did some housing vouchers, if you did some income supplements, in other words, you increased the earned income tax credit, if you created a jobs program, and a couple of other things, if you put those together, could you make an impact on poverty? And We hired a research institute to do it. And in fact, the results came back is, depending which combination you did, you could do a job in coming real close to cutting poverty in half in some areas to do it. Now, you got to invest a lot of money to do it, but our conclusion was there are things you can do that actually work. It's not futile. And I imagine in developing countries where there is abject poverty, there are things that you can do that work.
It's what you said is absolutely right. I mean, if you look at the statistics, look at the richer world, the countries that spend more on basic social safety nets, healthcare, education, proper insurance, are the countries that have the lowest poverty rates, the lowest child poverty rates. I mean, the best in the world would probably be the Nordic countries, the Scandinavian countries, because they spend a lot of money on it, and their people understand that if you're going to do this properly, you have to pay taxes to pay for it. So that's, you know, there's no free lunch. You have right. to pay taxes to pay for it. So that's absolutely true. So yes, these targeted interventions can work. Unfortunately, a lot of the developing countries simply do not have the tax revenue to be able to do that, which is why this idea of global solidarity is so important, which is why we, as the richer nations of the world, have a duty, have an obligation to stand with these countries.
I mean, I know that, you know, the standard stuff that people talk about is foreign aid. It seems to me that foreign aid, in some sense, is a little bit of a dated concept, given multinational companies, economies. What are some of the economic structures that achieve this?
That's a very good point. And I think when a lot of people think of foreign aid, they think of like handing a suitcase of cash to Mobutu or somebody like that who's going to squander it on corruption. And that's not. But I think the Millennium Development Goals is a very good case study in how targeted aid can work, especially in the health area. Because we saw with the Millennium Development Goals, by ramping up spending on healthcare interventions, we can do things like save 6 million people from dying of malaria, 37 million people from dying of TB since 2000, a 40% reduction in HIV infections, over 14 million people having antiretroviral therapy for HIV. All of this is caused by the fact that we actually took this health initiative seriously, ramped up aid on spending, targeted it properly, directed it towards the right people in the right areas in primary care, and it's working. So I think aid can work, but you have to think about it in the proper way.
Well, and I think, Tony, I appreciate you being with us. The fact is that aid has worked. I know when I read these reports, everybody wants to paint the world as really awful to get attention. But if you look at them in my world a little bit more analytically objective, a lot of those millennial goals have been achieved. And so we've made progress. And I like to talk to our listeners about, hey, we can solve these things more because we've solved some of it already. There's no sense the world isn't the most awful place in the whole universe. Yeah, there are a lot of problems, but we've dealt with them, and now we got to go forward. So, Tony Arnett, thank you so much for being with us, the Sustainable Development Consultant at the Earth Institute, and I'm sure you'll come back again and we can talk further about them.
I'll be delighted to come back anytime, Monsignor.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So, Angie, they got apples in Texas?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Did you go apple picking?
No.
Next week, we're going to talk about apple picking because I went apple picking last week and we're going to talk about it. Do you like applesauce?
I don't.
You
actually.
Don't?
No.
How come?
It just tastes funny to me.
Oh, you like apples?
I do like apples.
Apple pie?
I do.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So at least you're not completely out of it. Hey, this is Just Love. Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, thank you for being with us. Join us again next week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.